Jordan Dance!
Bring him up, gang. Bring him up.
Here we go. History in the making.
Green, green, green.
With NASCAR's court case finally behind us, where does the sport go from here? Hi, this is Brett McMillan. You're listening to the Pit Reporters. With me this week, Bruce Martin and Toby Christie.
Welcome to the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network. And now, here's your host, Brett McMillan.
Hey, welcome to the show. Glad to have Bruce and Toby here. And man, finally, this whole court case, which went on for a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. it just seems like that long, right, Bruce? It's one of those things. It finally got to the point you kind of went, couldn't they have done this like from the very beginning? I guess it took getting to this point that somebody realized that, okay, settling is the best option.
That is definitely the best option, and I agree with you, because there's been many people that have said they could have done this a year ago. And if they had done it a year ago, think of all the collateral damage that would not have happened. And that's the one takeaway I take from the whole court case itself, is there's an awful lot of victims that got involved in this unwillingly that are collateral damage. People like Richard Childress, he had to disclose financial details that were part of non-disclosure agreements. In a lot of ways, sad to say, I guess it took a court case in order to get what the two teams wanted and what generally most of the owners in NASCAR probably wanted, which was the permanent charter.
Well, that's the thing. We got to the point where some of the ownership testified, Toby, but then Rick Hendrick never had to get on the stand. Roger Penske never had to get on the stand because they were both NASCAR witnesses.
Yeah, and so you kind of wondered at that point, once the first few went up and they weren't part of the lawsuit, but they were kind of testifying on behalf of the other teams, kind of corroborating what they had already said, you kind of started wondering now, okay, well, Hendrick and Penske are supposed to be NASCAR witnesses, but are they going to say the same thing, or are they going to kind of go in line with what everybody else has been saying up here? So I think once the emails kind of came out that Hendrick and Penske sent to NASCAR right before the deadline, kind of explaining that they wanted permanent charters and things like that, as soon as once all that kind of was unearthed in front of the jury, I think at that point it was going to be kind of hard to really sway the jury that maybe these guys are actually on board with what NASCAR's saying here as well. So it was really weird. And when you started looking at a lot of the evidence that was in that courtroom over the 9 days, it was very overwhelming one way as opposed to the other.
What was interesting was Thursday was supposed to be the second full day of NASCAR's defense. And in a lot of ways, they came to the conclusion they didn't really have a defense.
Well, and that's the thing, that the first day of NASCAR's defense, Toby, was not necessarily disputing that they were a monopoly, but instead they were kind of going off another direction, almost kind of deflecting a little bit.
It felt like instead of worrying about not being a monopoly that was using power to do certain things, it felt like they were trying to minimize damages at that point. It felt like that was the whole purpose of their expert, was just to minimize damages and say this wasn't the actual cost, it should be this, as opposed to no, we didn't actually do this. So I'm with you on that. It felt really weird. It felt strange. It was an odd way for things to go. But I feel like Wednesday was really the knockout blow when you look at how Kessler came up to the stand and really just knocked out all three NASCAR witnesses, starting with Jim France, the recall of him, John Probst, and then, of course, Greg Motto, the chief financial officer as well. Those three testimonies back to back to back really kind of sealed things, I think.
The thing that we go back to almost from the very beginning, Bruce, is Judge Bell said from the beginning, you guys need to settle because there would be no winners. Now, at the end of the whole thing, everybody came out and we're slapping each other in the back and saying we're all happy with the way this is and we need this for the sport to move forward. But to your point, a lot of information got out there that I think NASCAR and the teams would have preferred never got out there. A lot of emails got out there. Richard Childress, some stuff got out there that was said about Richard Childress. Richard Childress had to testify because he was under oath about stuff that he had signed an NDA on, non-disclosure agreement that he was not supposed to even talk about. That got out there. There was a lot of information got out there that I think opened a lot of people's eyes. Wow, really? That's the situation?
That's one reason why Roger Penske and Rick Hendrick may be the most fortunate people to come out of the entire trial, because they didn't have to get questioned about their business practices, which there's nothing wrong with the way they do business. But a lot of their business is business-to-business relationships, which are really hard for a jury to understand, and even a lot of people who follow the sport, how a B2B relationship works in terms of sponsorship. So in that regard, they were very fortunate that it got settled when it did. But as I say, it was a situation, not many people will maybe get the analogy, but it was like the missiles of October, the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. It was brinksmanship, and both people were about to hit the button, and nobody wins in that type of war.
So ultimately, where does the sport go from here, Toby? I mean, you know, the teams got what they wanted, as they're not calling them permanent charters, they're calling them evergreen charters, which I think was... there are other elements in there too, where the, you know, the teams are getting part of the international money that NASCAR gets. But I think the permanent charters are really the key step in this whole thing.
Well, in every email you saw, every correspondence you saw with the teams to NASCAR, the number one bullet point was always permanent or evergreen charters. So the fact that that is part of the resolution here is huge for the teams. And I think when you look at it, we talked about why didn't this happen a year ago. Literally everything they've been talking about for that year, 2 years of negotiations, ended up being about what we ended up doing. So it is really weird that we didn't just skip the whole process, didn't put everybody's dirty laundry out in the middle of the courtroom for everybody to see. And we went through that whole process instead and drug it all out there. But we could have definitely ended this a lot earlier. But it was very interesting to see it all play out. But as far as where the sport goes, I mean, it's... who knows? This is uncharted territory, kind of like the whole lawsuit itself was. And the question now is, how much does this actually benefit the teams going forward?
The key will be how the fans respond. And there's been so much damaging evidence that have been put out there. And you know how fans are. Fans, once they get upset about a particular topic, they'll stay upset for a good long while. And it's going to be a long time for some of those fans to really trust the integrity of NASCAR in the future.
Let me ask you, though, Bruce, you're a fan of, you've covered other sports, you're a fan of other sports. Toby, you're a fan of other sports. Baseball's been on strike. Hockey shut down for an entire season. Basketball's been on strike. And yet the fans still come back.
But they didn't come back immediately. With baseball, it took a long time for the fans to come back to the ballpark. Baseball's big now, but I remember those years after the last strike where a lot of fans just said, we're never going back. And in some ways, we saw that happen in IndyCar racing in 1995, 1996, when the split began. And it took a long time for a lot of those. There's still fans in IndyCar that talk about the split. And I keep trying to remind them. I go, you've got people in the grandstands today that weren't even alive then. But it did damage to the integrity and the reputation of the sport. And NASCAR depends on its reputation, its heritage, its history to really keep the storyline going. And that's going to be a big issue for NASCAR to regain that storyline into a positive way.
Toby, do you agree with Bruce?
I do. I 100% do. The fans are in this industry, especially, are very astute to what's going on. I had some that were messaging me saying they were going through Pacer, getting all the court docs and going through it themselves. I'm like, you guys are, wow. Like, geez, like you guys are going through it just like we all are. So it was really impressive to see that from the fan side of things, but yeah, it's going to take some earning the trust back of the fans. And then another aspect is, you know, the France family famously ruled this sport with iron fist for so long. Now that this has happened, does that change that dynamic? I mean, all of a sudden you've lost a lot of your leverage going forward as well if you're the Frances. And so now that issues the question, how do we go forward with that as well as far as the governing side of things?
But I'm curious how much that does, because when you really get back down to it, the France family still owns NASCAR. The, you know, Jim Frances Trust, Lisa France Kennedy's trust still owns 100% of NASCAR. So how much damage have they really suffered outside of having to give up the whole evergreen charter, which is what Jim did not want to do? We'll talk about that when we come back.
Listen, were you forced into getting a solar contract and now you just don't want it anymore? Maybe the solar company misled you. Or is your solar contract buried with hidden fees? Are you not saving the amount of money you thought you would on your energy costs? Don't worry. At the Solar Exit Hotline, we can help you cancel your solar contract, even if the panels are already installed. Our experienced legal team will review your contract and help you cancel it, possibly saving you thousands of dollars. You got to call right now. right now for complete details. So listen, if you're not happy with your solar contract for any reason, we are here to help you cancel it. Call the Solar Exit Hotline now for immediate options to help you exit your solar contract. This call is 100% free.
800-471-3491. 800-471-3491. 800-471-3491. That's 800-471-3491.
Lenny Baticki brings you PRN at the Track every week here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hi, this is Doug Rice at PRN. Join me every Monday night for another great episode of Fast Talk.
I watched the race on TV, and they wanted to give him the mantle of greatest of all time, and he's won four races in a row, and so I can't do that yet. But I do think what we're watching is a guy who's changing the sport. He's changing the way the other drivers approach road racing. He's making them study. He's making them up their game.
That's Fast Talk right here on the Performance Racing Network.
Local radio brings people together like never before.
It's a beautiful hometown weekend out there. We've got
your local stations keep you informed and involved with music, talk shows, and real-time news updates you can trust. We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters, connecting you to what matters most. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress to support your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to four messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Brett McMillan returns with more of the Pit Reporters here on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back. Along with Toby Christie, Bruce Barton, Brett McMillan. Glad to have you with us. We're talking about the settlement between 2311 and NASCAR. 29 Front Row Motorsports also involved there as well. Still, NASCAR is still a France-owned entity. I mean, Jim France Trust still owns 54 point whatever percent. At least France Kennedy still owns 40 whatever's left. But, you know, as are we avoiding situations like this down the road? Is there, do the teams now have maybe Jim's attention?
I think they've definitely got, you know, a voice, right? I mean, you can't just all of a sudden say, you know, put them up on a clock and take the charter away anymore. So these are people you're not going to just be able to get rid of anymore. They're here for the long term unless they violate the couple terms that are going to be in the Evergreen agreement. So at this point, you kind of have to hear them out. And at that point, it becomes who wins in the leverage game in future negotiations. But that'll be the interesting thing to kind of see going forward, I think.
I mean, the thing is, Bruce, NASCAR's always claimed we're not stick and ball of sports. We're different from stick and ball of sports. And yet at the same time, Michael Jordan's big thing was you got to run it like others. This is not run like other sports. It needs to be run more closely to other sports. And that's one of the big things about these charters. When you buy an NFL franchise, you own that franchise in perpetuity. And until now, the league and the other owners have the right to vote you in or to approve or unapprove you, to approve whether or not you own that team. But you own it in perpetuity, and that's what Jordan had been saying. Why don't we get to own this charter as long as we want to own it?
Well, for the longest time, NASCAR has benefited by team owners that had a lot of money that weren't afraid to just spend it just to go racing. And at some point, even a rich millionaire is going to run out of some money and say, why am I doing this? And when you look at the dollar figures that came out, it's pretty astounding. We learned a lot with the trial with some of the things that came out, such as Denny Hamlin's salary. Denny Hamlin gets what? Seven times what the NASCAR commissioner gets paid, which, I mean, that's pretty good. And that's only counting his driver's salary at Joe Gibbs Racing. The biggest problem that NASCAR is going to have to face moving forward is the reputation's been tarnished. How do they get back that luster? That might take a while, but to your point, the team owners now have probably more power than they've ever had in NASCAR.
I mean, that's interesting to really think about. At least they have, you know, I guess the threat of going through this again, but I don't think, you know, is it there? I mean, is it really there?
They have a seat at the table, which is probably more than they had before, was a legitimate seat at the table, because We've been involved in NASCAR for a very long time, and I'm not saying what NASCAR did was necessarily illegal, but it came across as heavy-handed. And to have a successful sports league in auto racing, sometimes you have to have some heavy-handedness to it, because there's a lot of different factions out there that other sports don't have. The NBA also doesn't have to listen to the OEMs, the car manufacturers, the drivers, the team owners. NBA listens to the team owners and the players. But other than that, the league is pretty much owned by the team owners, so they have to deal with the Players Association. We haven't really seen, even though there is an RTA, we haven't really seen the same strength in that we see with like professional stick and ball sports and there's players associations. So that's going to be something that the entire industry is going to have to sort through.
I mean, Bruce makes a great point from the standpoint you've got, you know, the team owners, the manufacturers want to have a say in the way the sport is officiated. Then you got the drivers. And you got the track operators, not all of whom are, you know, obviously two major track operators. And, you know, they want their piece of the TV money, which I understand. And they also, you know, they can't operate on their own because they're still paying sanctioning fees to host races.
Yeah, there's a lot of balls at play for sure. And when you look at things, you know, Bruce was talking about, you know, driver unions or team union, player unions in other sports. At some point, there's going to have to be a driver's union. I know that was a huge point of contention back in the 60s, was that was possibly forming, and the France family didn't like that. We're going to probably see that at this point now. Now that people are kind of seeing, okay, like this hasn't been the way this is supposed to have gone for so many years, I think you're going to see the team, the drivers start to band together. And I mean, Denny Hamlin's a prime example. He was part of this lawsuit. He's also a driver, so I'm sure he could be a leading voice there to kind of forge that as well. But there are a lot of different players in this sport, and it's a lot more different than other sports where there's more hands out that need to kind of get part of that TV revenue. And so it makes it very, very, very difficult, very, very different.
I find the interesting thing is, I mean, one of the primary purposes of the charters in the first place was to give the owners who are involved in the sport, Bruce, something that when they get out of the sport, that they've got something to take with them.
Equity.
Because they were selling parts and pieces for pennies on the dollar. And now the Sports Business Journal has already reported that charters could now be going, as a result of this lawsuit, the settlement, they could now be going for possibly double what they were going for. I mean, the last one to sell was this Legacy Motor Club paying Rick Ware Racing $45 million for a charter. They're speculating, as Sports Business Journal is speculating, they'll at least top $50 million. But some of the bullish people are saying it could go closer to 90 to 100 million just as a result of this lawsuit being settled.
And when you think about it, we've seen a lot of equity investors get involved in race teams, such as Dan Towers and Mark Walter with Spire Motorsports. Dan Towers is a huge equity investor out of Indiana. And what makes these guys billionaires is their ability to see a trend in a market. Now, this could have gone a different way, but in a lot of ways, this is about as good a situation as both sides could have hoped for. Because like I said, if this had gone to a jury trial and the judge had lowered the hammer on NASCAR, the whole sport would have suffered.
And I think, Toby, the one thing we didn't know was if NASCAR lost this, what that would mean.
Absolutely. That was the big unknown. And to Bruce's point, I believe that's why the settlement actually happened. I don't think it was because the teams had all the leverage at this point. It was obvious they were going to win this trial, but Michael Jordan said that the consensus was nobody wanted to tear the sport down. At the end of the day, he does love the sport, wants the sport to continue. He does appreciate what the France family's built. And ultimately, I think that was kind of just the, okay, it's over. You concede defeat and we'll move on here and we'll do it without this getting uglier. So, it was a weird situation because again, like whether it's penalty appeals or just, you know, somebody threatening to sue NASCAR over the years, you never expected anybody to ever win a situation like this or come out on top. So this completely shifts that thought process, I think, going forward in these situations.
A scorched earth policy would have left a lot of things a smoldering ruins. So in a lot of ways, like I said, it was, the biggest case of brinksmanship in NASCAR that I've ever seen, and probably in its entire history.
Well, now that this is behind us, I think the next big news to come out of NASCAR is going to be, what does the championship look like in 2026? We don't know. Let's see what these guys think it should look like when we come back.
Whether your engine runs daily or only when you need it, Z-Max Micro Lubricant is the force you need against carbon buildup that can damage your engine. Combustion causes carbon and other harmful deposits to build up in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. And carbon is like sandpaper rubbing against your engine's internal parts. You don't want that. You want Z-Max Micro Lubricant. It soaks into metal and keeps your vehicle running at peak performance. Find out more at Z-Max.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter. Protect your engine to the max with Z-Max.
This is the kind of racing you can feel in your chest. Door to door, inches apart, every lap all on the line. This is Echo Park Speedway, the hottest track in NASCAR. 3 days of tailgates, camping, and full throttle fun. But Sunday is chaos, speed, and glory. This February 22nd, the Auto Trader 400 takes over Atlanta. Get tickets at EchoParkSpeedway.com.
Mark Garrow is your host for Garage Pass here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, it's Charlie and Debbie, along with NASCAR legend Kyle Petty, inviting you to join us for Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown.
Each week, we'll put it in reverse and take a trip down memory lane, looking back at that week's top 20 country songs from years past.
We'll dive into what made those songs and artists move the needle, what pop culture trends made those years unique.
And you'll get to hear me tell stories only I can tell.
So don't miss Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown right here each week.
Welcome to PRN's At the Track. I'm Lenny Baticki. We are PRN's half-hour weekly show dedicated to the short track, dirt track, legends, and kart racing across the Southeast. We provide our audience with the news and insightful conversations with the newsmakers from grassroots racing.
How did that help you this time to take this victory from a grassroots perspective?
I definitely felt like Martinsville was a lot harder than the other one.
That's PRN's At the Track.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back, along with Bruce Martin and Toby Christie. Brett McMillan, glad to have you with us. All right, we've decided now that the trial's behind us that, Christmas is coming, so I guess that's going to delay it even more because we can't set any kind of championship format during Christmas. We've got to take a couple weeks off, right?
For the championship?
Oh, for yeah, you know,
one could only hope they have a championship format in place by production day so that they can go ahead and get driver comments and quotes like that. I know you're going to ask what championship format it'll be. I have no idea. There's a large portion of race fans out there that wish it was the old system, but in today's world, I don't know if that would really keep the buzz for both the TV networks and for the nouveau fans. They probably sit there thinking, 36 races to figure out who the champion is. That may be the fairest way of doing it, but even Major League Baseball went to a playoff system in 1969. It used to be the team with the best record in the American League met the team with the best record in the National League in the World Series.
And they never played before that.
Yeah, you could never do that in today's world. Maybe I'm wrong, but what I've heard that makes a little bit of sense if you were going to keep both was to have a 3-3-4 format. I don't know how Martinsville Speedway would feel about that because a lot of the pizzazz they get for their next to last race of the season is that determines who the four drivers are that fight it out for the championship. Now it would be the third race in a four race stretch, but that would probably be the fairest way to do it if you're going to meld the two systems together.
Toby, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, could we get this before Christmas? I mean, if it's a format that everybody likes, maybe, because then we'd all have something to celebrate and it'd be like a present. But I feel like so many people are divided on this, like Bruce was saying, the fans, a lot of them are really, you know, battling for that full season schedule. Honestly, I would prefer that too, just because that's the era I grew up in was that, and I loved it. I love the purity of it and the fact that any race you made a mistake that could factor in later on. But I'm with Bruce. I think a 3-3-4 is a good compromise as far as a playoff system goes, or even the 10 race chase would probably be fine as well, because you at least give a little bit more of a sample size to kind of whittle your playoff guys down and kind of get a guy that didn't just go out and take, you know, two tires on the last pit stop of a race and make up five spots and all of a sudden get the championship in a green white checkered shootout. So, you know, I if it's me, I want a full race 36 race schedule, but I could see compromises being made and I'd be okay with a couple of them.
I made it pretty clear in the show that I still like a playoff format. I think you got to have a playoff format. I think in this day and age, I think if I'm a sponsor and my guy's sitting there in 10th place in August, I want the guy to have a chance to win a championship. I want attention paid to him. And if it's a 31-36, then nobody's paying attention to my guy sitting in 10th place because he has no chance of winning the championship. So I want some kind of playoff. One thing hit me today that I surprised it hadn't dawned on me before. In this day and age, where we're more, for lack of a better term, health conscious, where we're not sticking guys in a car with their eyes taped open because he can't afford to miss a race, how do you deal with that, where you're giving guys medical passes for the safety, for his own safety and the safety of everybody in the field? How do you reconcile that in the 1-36 format?
I don't think you do. I think in that situation, if you miss races, that's it. I mean, you're if you get enough points, great. But if you don't, that's it. I mean, that's just how sports are, right? You miss a game. The starting quarterback for the Eagles misses the Super Bowl, right? They're not going to get that back. Purdy was injured a few years ago for the 49ers, right? He got hurt mid-game. Somebody else came in. They got blown out. So that's just what happens in sports. If you get hurt, there are consequences for that. And if you have a full 36 race schedule, you don't have enough points to do it, then you're not the champion. That's just all there is to it.
Daniel Jones of the Indianapolis Colts can attest to that. Yeah. Because they were on their way to the playoffs, and I love Philip Rivers. Don't think it's going to happen.
But no, they were losing before Daniel Jones got hurt. Their defense was failing first.
Well, that's true, and it's going to be the ultimate. It's going to be the ultimate bitter pill, as they say, for Indianapolis Colts fans. But
to me, if we're sitting here saying now you're encouraging guys to get out there and drive, if they had no business getting out there and driving, think about Dale Earnhardt Jr., who had the guts to sit there and say, "I got a concussion, I don't need to be in the car." Now, all of a sudden, if you're going 1-36 again, then it's like, I got to hide this because I got to be in the car.
I mean, that is a problem. It's a legit concern, but if you have the medical testing at the tracks like we're supposed to have with the baseline testing and stuff like that, we should be catching these situations. And if it's caught, enforce it. Don't let it be on the driver. So, and even the team, they see something weird. They see the drivers doing some weird stuff throughout the week or when they're at the track, flag it. Like, at the end of the day, the long-term health of your driver is more important than a possible championship run. And at this point, we've talked about runaway champions, right? Where that's the big concern. At this point, it would have to be the guy leading the points by 300 points in most people's mind to even matter at this point. So if it's a runaway champion, it doesn't matter anyway, unless it's that guy.
Or revise the relief driver or substitute driver rule. That would be one way to do it, although there would be a lot of people that would say, they're putting a ringer in the car. Well, we don't really have ringers too much anymore other than Shane Van Gisbergen on a street and road course, but that could be one solution. And the other thing is, if you had an independent medical doctor that would make the final call, whether you're healthy enough to get behind the wheel or not.
Well, I still think that I think you need the playoff. I've made this example before on this show. I think people have made this. Mark Martin's off here on this. You know, you got to make rivalries, and you have rivalries by guys running. Come on. I love Ross Chastain, and I've talked about that. I've mentioned this on the show numerous times. Ross Chastain is not the star he is today if it's not for the playoffs. Because if it's not for the playoffs, he doesn't make the move he made at Martinsville. And that helped make him a star. And I think those types of moments are what this sport needs to help grab attention, to help make the fans interested. To your point about Martinsville, a okay, it may be part of a 4 or 3 race thing for the championship. I maintain the summer Daytona race or the whatever, if we're going to summer, fall, whatever it is, a September Daytona race does not sell out, does not get the crowd it gets, does not get the interest it gets if it's not a cutoff race.
There's a lot of people that recognize that, Daytona being one of them, but the TV executives being the most important because they're the ones that everybody's living off of at the moment. That's the rights fees. TV's very unlikely to agree to a 36 race full season championship. And that will be the final decision. It will probably come from the TV execs.
But allegedly, NBC has said, it's your call. Now, I find that kind of hard to believe that NBC has totally washed their hands of it and told NASCAR, you do what you think is best. Toby, really?
I feel like there's a wink-wink, nudge-nudge with that statement, obviously. And just based on things we've heard from people that were in the playoff committee, I believe there was more than just a let NASCAR do whatever they think they need to do. But that being said, you know, you look at how ratings were before the playoff system was enacted. Now, obviously, the playoff format wasn't a thing yet, so nobody knew what else there could have been. I mean, the trajectory for the sport was on the upward swing, right? Since the playoffs got there, a couple of years into the first iteration of the chase, things have been nosediving ever since to now we're at where we're at. And you talked about, you know, Ross Chastain making himself a star based on the playoff format. Yeah, but I know a lot of guys who made themselves stars during the non-playoff format as well. I mean, look at all the guys that came from that era that people still talk about, still wear their fire suit jackets and stuff like that around. So there were a lot of stars made without the playoff format, and I think there could be again.
Bobby Allison and Darrell Waltrip. What a great era to be covering racing.
Yep, and that was a different time. There's a lot less stuff to watch and no streaming.
And Hollywood made movies about it, such as Stroker Ace.
Yeah, how many races, how many movies we got with the playoff format in it?
Now, let's
I don't even think Ricky Bobby. I think that was still with the classic, wasn't it?
Yeah. Format?
I don't know.
I don't know. I still think you got to have a playoff format. I think you need it. I think the sport needs it. So we'll see.
Who knows?
Sooner or later, they're gonna make an announcement. All right. Still ahead. I'm going to find out who these guys think has got to be the most, who's got to really step it up as we start 2026. Stay with us.
Hey, listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-509-1741. 800-509-1741. 800-509-1741. That's 800-509-1741. Paid for by Term Direct.
Doug Rice is your host for Fast Talk every week on PRN, the Performance Racing Network. Here's Paul Doschel of Toyota.
We have a kind of robust program around NASCAR, and we feel that if we're going to be there and compete against Chevrolet and Ford, that we want to be able to tell that story. And so we feel that a 360-degree approach is the best for that. Radio fills a much-needed void in our marketing program. Being able to have our commercial spots and the relationship that we have with PRN, where they talk about our vehicles as Camrys and Supras.
The Toyota GR Supra makes that hard left turn onto pit road.
As pace cars, you know, the Toyota Camry pace car or the GR Supra pace car adds a nice touch to broadcast rather than when it's just the pace cars coming out of turn 4. So for us, it's really the coming together of the 360-degree approach to really make our program all-inclusive.
NASCAR Network Radio drives business. Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
And welcome back, along with Toby Christie and Bruce Martin. Brett McMillan, glad to have you with us. All right, Toby, I kind of teed it up going into the break. Who do you think is really on the hot seat to prove something coming into 2026?
I mean, I think the easy low-hanging fruit's Daniel Suarez. I mean, he was on the outside looking in there at Trackhouse. It looked pretty obvious there for all of us that that's what was going to end up happening, and it did happen. And now he has a chance at Spire Motorsports to kind of get back on his feet and show what he can do. We saw, you know, the 77 car had speed at multiple times throughout the year. The 71 had great speed at multiple times throughout the year. The 7's kind of lagged the last few years over there at Spire. So if he can show something in that 7 car, this might be able to sustain his future for a long time. If not, this could be very close to the beginning of the end. This might be the last stop for him. Who knows? But I think Daniel Suarez is the guy I think needs to step up.
Well, taking that a step further, Spire, as you talked about, Spire seemed to be taking a step forward at times last year. They had speed, but they couldn't finish races.
And there were mistakes made by both other drivers that were doing decently, which was Carson Hocevar and Michael McDowell. Both of them would kind of put themselves in contention at times throughout the races, and then they'd make an error or a costly mistake, or they'd have a mechanical gremlin like McDowell at Atlanta, I think, lost 6 laps with a power steering issue, came back, got all 6 laps back, finished like top 15. But that could have been a race win had he not had that situation. So there's lots of situations like that throughout the year with both of those cars where they were really, really fast and just had something really weird happen, whether it be a driver error, mechanical gremlin, or something like that. And I think if they can fix all that up, I think they'll be in a good spot next year.
Bruce, who are you looking at?
I'm going to take a different approach, but it's going to be on a similar topic. I think one of the stars of the future, Carson Hocevar, has to learn how to win. He's done everything to get the car up there to be in contention, but as Toby just said, a mistake here, errors there, have kept him from getting a checkered flag. The other thing that I'm going to go out is, how do you name a guy who won 5 races in 2025 as a guy who needs to step it up? Not on the street and road courses, but on the ovals, and that's Shane Van Gisbergen. The guy's got tremendous talent, but in this business, you're not going to be a champion unless you can also win on the ovals. And I'm going to throw a team in there. In its beginning, Trackhouse was really NASCAR's up-and-coming team. They've seemed to have tailed off a bit in the last season or two. I think in a lot of ways, Justin Marks has to regain that out-of-the-envelope thing that Trackhouse stood for.
Well, and he has to some extent. You know, he's brought some people in, some former executives from Joe Gibbs Racing, took a lot of look at where they were spending money during this off season, and kind of retooled some things. You know, plus you're bringing in Connor Zillich, so all of a sudden there seems to be a good hope for the future there.
There's definitely hope for the future with Connor Zillich, who's also going to be running some IMSA races in 2026. And another interesting team, I think, is Colleg, because they are going to be bringing in a new manufacturer into the sport, at least in the truck series, and after a few seasons, probably in the Cup Series. And it'll be interesting to see what all that will entail that gives them a chance to really be a factory team for a big-time manufacturer. And I think everybody knows that's Dodge.
What you guys both talked about and mentioned Spire. We saw Spire at times improve last year. I thought as the year went on, we saw Legacy Motor Club really begin to step forward a little bit. Which team do you think makes the most progress this year, Legacy or Spire?
Man, that's a tough one because there were stretches at really difficult tracks where Legacy Motor Club was starting to perform pretty well. You look at Darlington, they were both top 5 there. I could see them taking that next step forward as well. It seems like they've been making a lot of the right moves behind the scenes. You were talking about executives with Trackhouse. They've been bringing in a lot of people on the back end of the Legacy Motor Club team, and all of a sudden you're starting to kind of see the fruits of that labor, and those guys are starting to elevate their performance. So if I'm going gut instinct, just based off of what I saw out of the two teams towards the end of the year last year, I would say Legacy Motor Club goes forward while Spire stays the same or maybe doesn't go forward quite as much. But I could see either one doing it, but my gut says Legacy Motor Club.
What would you say, Bruce?
Legacy has definitely improved, and I'm going to use a name that I brought up earlier, and that's Dan Towers, because when it comes to having the financial resources, Spire is going to have a pretty deep pocket to dip into with Dan Towers and Mark Walter. People wonder, who's Mark Walter? Well, his team's won the World Series the last couple of years, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and both are very, very wealthy. So they always say money buys speed in this sport. Well, they've got money.
Well, but does it buy chemistry and does it buy victories?
We shall see, won't we? You're right. It takes the entire package, and that's why Legacy has an advantage in that regard. And also, man, when Jimmy Johnson walks into a room talking to partners and sponsors, that's means something. So Legacy's got a little bit of a cachet in that regard.
Well, I think it was interesting because last year, you know, Jimmy Johnson himself admitted that they, during the last offseason, they'd learned some lessons. And they made a lot of changes, Toby, not that fans would see. They made a lot of changes back in the shop and back in the offices. That's where they made their improvements last year because they realized that the infrastructure is where things needed to improve, not necessarily on the teams themselves. And I think that's what you began to see pay off as that year went on.
Oh, absolutely. And too often in this sport, we hear people say, oh, we know what needs to be done and we're going to make improvements this year. You wait and see. And then we see it ends up being the same old story, right? Year after year after year. But I mean, they said it and ultimately they backed it up. So I'm intrigued to see what another year of that can bring them. They've got two really good drivers with Eric Jones, John Hunter Nemechek. We know that they're race win capable guys in every series they've been in at this point. So it will be interesting to see if they can take that next step forward. But I like what they've built there. I think from where they were 2 years ago to where they are now, it's light years ahead of where they were. So I like the trajectory I'm seeing.
It shows the importance of working on the foundation before you start adding more stories to the skyscraper and getting that foundation to support what Jimmy Johnson and the rest of the people at Legacy are trying to do is a very good point. Doesn't get all the attention that or the headlines that a lot of people like to see, but that's what it takes to build a team that's going to win races.
Bruce had mentioned Toby, the colleague, taking on the huge task of starting up five truck teams for Dodge, for Ram. And I think they realized after they took this on that it was probably a bigger task than they thought it was going to be because they are going to keep their two Cup teams, but they're putting their Xfinity program on hold, which is where they had hung their hat in the past. What can we expect out of that? I mean, knowing that Ram's going to put a whole lot of into this, can we? I'm sure Ram expects wins. Is it realistic for us to expect wins?
I don't think initially, right? I think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle out of the box. Fortunately for them, the Ilmor motor is what everybody's running, so they don't have to worry about that. It's all about the aerodynamics of the truck and kind of just getting the entire new set of teammates that they've got in there, kind of building things and getting the actual build outs going correctly. So once they kind of get that process fine tuned for five trucks that they're going to be having and get all that going, I think they will start winning races. I think Brennan Queen is obviously a guy that could win once he gets a little experience under his belt. He was starting to do some pretty good stuff in Xfinity in the few starts he had there. So I like what they've got there. I think that's a good solid block to build off of. And I think this is a huge opportunity, like Bruce was saying, for Colic Racing. While ultimately their Cup program is probably going to suffer for a couple of years while they're in a lame duck situation with Chevrolet, I think ultimately the end fruits will be paired with possible championship contending team down the road with an alliance with a team with a manufacturer like Dodge, I think could be huge. And if they get that all the way to fruition in the Cup Series, I think that'll be a complete game changer for that team.
What are your expectations, Bruce?
It'll be a little bit of a struggle at the beginning, but it seems like they hired Ty Norris as the director of business development on that team. And when you talk to Matt Colic, he's a very impressive businessman. So I think they'll find a way to get more competitive. But we've seen new manufacturers come into sport before. We were here when Dodge came back in the early 2000s. And there's the initial struggle, but it really didn't take them long to start winning races. So whether they're able to do that in 2026 and beyond, that remains to be seen. But I think you have to almost expect coming right out of the box, there's going to be some growing pains.
All right. When we come back, one last look at 2025, get these guys' thoughts on maybe who driver of the year was, maybe what the big story is that they'll remember from this year. Stay with us.
When it comes to maintaining your engine to run at peak performance, trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant. Z-Max soaks into metal, so it's easy to add to your oil or gas to disperse carbon buildup in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. Protect your vehicle's engine to the max with Z-Max. Check us out at zmax.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter to find out more about our full line of products. Remember the name, Z-Max, for your car, big rig, small engines, firearms, and more. That's Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
In addition to traditional summer camp, Victory Junction also hosts family weekends, partner programs, and day camps. And the Victory Junction Outreach Program takes camp fun beyond our gates to children at hospitals and partner sites throughout North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. Victory Junction makes the impossible accessible.
This is a place that needs to be here 50 years from now, 100 years from now. We are never going to run out of kids that can benefit from Victory Junction.
Discover how you can get involved at victoryjunction.org.
Catch Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown with Charlie and Debbie here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
These cars are about to fire it off in anger.
Logano back across the stripe. Now Zane Smith putting on some pressure.
Side by side, Austin Cindric has him at the line, and he will take the lead into one.
Boy, what a save. We got cars sideways. It's Christopher Bell. He spins and collects a couple cars. Here comes Shane Van Gisbergen on the bottom. He's looking for second.
Now Chris Buescher fired out of a cannon at turn two. He's right into the rear bumper of Taggett. Which way is he going to go?
Oh, it's a multi-car accident. I want to say 15, 20 cars. Looks like Austin Cindric is involved. Denny Hamlin. Guys, that took out about two-thirds of the field.
We have a fight on pit road between two crew guys. One of them is with Ty Gibbs. One is with Brad Keselowski.
Brad Keselowski will see the white flag as he drives under the start-finish line.
Chase Elliott has battled at the front all night long. He's won the war. Chase Elliott has just punched his ticket to the playoffs.
Awesome job, man. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
This is PRN. Brett McMillan returns with more of the Pit Reporters here on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back. Along with Bruce Morton. Bruce Morton?
He used to work for CBS.
Bruce Martin and Toby Christie. I'm Brett McMillan. We're glad to have you with us. All right, I kind of teed you up. It doesn't have to be a cup driver, but who is your driver of the year in 2026?
I love Kyle Larson, but it wasn't him. I would have to say in the Cup Series, well, depends on how you break it down, because Shane Van Gisbergen seemed to be perfection on street and road courses, but he wasn't the champion. Kind of hard to pass over Denny Hamlin. He won the most races, and he was within four laps of winning his first championship before fate intervened. But I would have to go in a lot of ways with Denny Hamlin, because he still has it behind the wheel of a race car.
Yeah. How about you, Toby?
I'm right there with you. I think especially with a brand new crew chief pairing this year, too, there was a lot of uncertainty with that. I know Denny had some angst and anxiety about that going into the season, and ultimately they came out firing on all cylinders and had one of the best seasons he's ever had as a Cup Series driver at the age he's currently at, and like Bruce said, was just a few laps away from winning the championship. It was a foregone conclusion. That's where we were heading. As long as we didn't have a late race caution, we got the late race caution, of course, and that changed everything. So I think you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who deserves Driver of the Year better than Denny Hamlin.
Honorable mention, way up there would be Connor Zilich, because, I mean, there was a period there where he did it. He won. It seems like he won every week.
Yeah, I think, and Corey Heim, too. I mean, for the record-breaking performance in trucks, I mean, there was a lot of great performances throughout all three series this year. And then you look at the guys that were kind of challenging these guys for the championships as well. A lot of those guys had really good years, too. They were just very overshadowed by the other guys.
Yeah. Speaking really quickly of new crew chiefs and Denny Hamlin's crew chief being replaced. Any idea what's going on with Chris Gabehart? We know he's left Joe Gibbs Racing. He was Denny's crew chief 2 years ago, went to the front office this year, seemed to oversee a kind of a renaissance at Joe Gibbs Racing, and now he's out there. Do we know any idea where he's going to land? Any idea? We're hearing anything?
I would imagine probably a place that has a strong financial ledger, and I think Bruce has kind of hit on that recently, is my guess. I think he's probably heading over that way, probably over to Spire, right?
That would definitely be how you build a winning race team and create chemistry, is to get a guy who's built winning race teams and created chemistry.
Well, and they took the big swing with Rodney Childers, too, and it didn't work last year, but I think you bring in a guy like Chris Gabehart, who's had sustained success and recent sustained success, and from the back end as far as being competition director as well, you add those two things together, and I think that's a potent hire if they were to do that.
But we don't know anything, and nothing's been said. It could be a non-compete. I don't know what the non-compete situation is these days.
Let's take him to court. We'll see what happens.
Please, please, let's not take him to court.
Take that back.
Sort it out.
What is going to be the big story or the big couple of stories you're going to remember from 2025, Bruce?
Unfortunately, the court case. That's the number one story, because that was the thing that overshadowed and in some ways took some of the air out of the season, was this impending court case that was going to happen. The other thing I'll remember is just how unbelievably good Denny Hamlin was at Phoenix, only to have a late race caution take away any opportunity for him to win, because it was almost a no-win situation of, do we pit? Do we stay out? If we stay out on older tires, we're probably going to get passed. If we stop and get new tires, we're going to be so far back, we don't have enough time to get up to the front. People may like or dislike Denny Hamlin, but you had to really feel a lot of empathy for the way he felt after that race was over.
Yep. Toby, how about you?
Yeah, and I also want to take away what Denny Hamlin did to prepare for that race, too. When I talked to him after the championship race in an interview, he was telling me that he completely did everything differently than he usually does. And when you watch the race, he did. Usually he kind of lets the race come to him. He lets the tires kind of wear out for everybody else, and he charges towards the front. He was going for it the whole race. He didn't let anything else come to him. He dominated the event. Like Bruce said, probably the best race at Phoenix we've seen anybody run since the championship was being decided there. And ultimately didn't have the luck in the end to get the championship, but a heck of a performance, and ultimately would have been the cap of what was a tremendous season for him.
What are you most looking forward to in 2026, Bruce?
Where the focus becomes on the races and not on court cases, and where the fans start to pay more attention to what's going on the track rather than shoulda, woulda, coulda, you know, we want this system, we want that system. It seems like, albeit there are other people on this show that probably are more in tune with what the fans want than I am, but it just seems like they're never satisfied. Or maybe they are, but it's the minority of people that have the loudest voices that get heard the most. But I really think that NASCAR's got to get back to what NASCAR was good at, which was organic drama, not manufactured drama. And also it's going to be interesting to see how long it takes before NASCAR is able to regain the trust of its fans.
Toby, how about you?
Bruce, do you know how you get rid of manufactured drama?
How?
You get rid of the playoff format.
Oh, well, that's one way.
I had to do it. It was easy. It's going to be interesting. There's a lot of things to kind of keep an eye on. I also want to look at things, you know, we talked about people who are kind of on the hot seat, need to kind of get things figured out. Kyle Busch is another storyline we need to talk about too. He's a couple of years now without a win, and you know the career's not getting any younger. He's not getting any younger. At some point, it's going to be over, but this is a guy that just a few years ago was one of the most dominant forces in the series. So can he get back to where he needs to be? Can some of these other guys that have been really, really good for so many years that have kind of slumped off with the next-gen car, can they kind of get back on it is another thing I kind of look forward to for next year.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the San Diego race. I think that's going to be really cool.
It'll be different, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think the scenery is going to be spectacular. Hopefully the race is good, even though Shane Van Gisbergen is going to run away and win the thing. Based on what that's something, you talk about something I'll remember from 2025. Not that he won five races, that he kicked everybody's behind and left all these guys going, I don't know how the heck he does it.
It was so bad that he was literally choosing to pit before the ends of the stages to put himself in a better position to get a better overall finish, and was still winning the stages by doing that. I mean, yeah. That's, and passing Kyle Larson, who wasn't doing that, Yeah. The stage wins. I mean, that's incredible. And I don't know if we've ever seen dominance of that kind on any kind of a track in NASCAR. Maybe Bill Elliott on the super speedways back in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
That was dominance. But other than that, I don't think we've seen anybody that covers the field that well on any kind of track.
I mean, there were people talking about, you think they need to quit showing his feet there on TV? Or what do you learn watching his feet on TV? The guys are going, I could watch that all day long, and I'm not going to learn a thing because what he's doing is so much different than what I'm doing. It's like I could try it for years, and it's never going to work out. But, yeah, he was that dominant this year. When we come back, white flag laps.
It's more than a rebellion. When your teen is slipping into drugs or alcohol, when social media and pornography consume their time and their mind, when depression and even suicidal thoughts cast a shadow over your home, as a parent, you feel powerless. There is hope. At Turnabout Ranch, troubled teens step away from the chaos and into a clarity of nature on a working cattle ranch. Care for horses, learn responsibility, build trust, and rediscover purpose. It isn't theory, it's real work, real therapy, real healing. Families from across the country have found transformation right here, just when they thought hope was gone. If your teen is struggling with addiction, harmful online behaviors, even weight management, call right now and get the help you all need.
800-277-1650. 800-277-1650. 800-277-1650. That's 800-277-1650.
Lenny Baticki brings you PRN at the Track every week here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
My fiancé is a veteran.
I did tours in Korea, Germany, and Bosnia before I got injured.
When Yusuf got out of the military, he needed help getting his disability benefits.
Luckily, DAV came to the rescue. They fought for me the same way that I fought for my country.
Every year, DAV provides life-changing support to more than a million veterans.
My victory is never giving up and finding more ways to serve.
He's pretty amazing.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, this is Doug Rice at PRN. Join me for another great episode of Fast Talk. We have NASCAR Hall of Famer Kurt Busch. What does a much older, wiser Kurt Busch want to tell Carson Hocevar?
Well, let's bust out all the VHS tapes and you can watch all my mistakes. Try not to do those, Carson. I like what he's doing. He's learning and he's putting his time in up front.
That's Fast Talk right here on PRN.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
And hey, welcome back. Time now for our white flag laps. And first up, Toby Christie.
We talked about all the different, you know, player unions, owner unions in their sports and stuff like that, and how the RTA and stuff weren't as strong. But I want to point out that maybe the RTA is kind of what led to what ultimately happened in this lawsuit, because with them being so organized and together with all the other teams, it led to all the email communications and all the kind of consistent thought processes from all the teams and all the meetings they had behind the scenes that kind of laid the foundation for the case, ultimately, that was presented by Jeffrey Kessler and those guys that sealed the deal. So while it doesn't appear they were very strong, I think they were stronger than we think that they were. I do agree they weren't as strong as we see the other unions in the other sports, but I think they were stronger than we think they were, and I think they're a huge credit to what happened.
All right. Next up, Bruce Martin.
This may be the white flag lap, but in many ways, it's my checkered flag lap for being on the Pit Reporters. It's a show that I've always enjoyed playing a role in, to be invited as a guest and to talk about NASCAR and other forms of racing from time to time. When this show started, most people didn't know that reporters and writers could really talk or have a personality, or some people have some colorful characters to them. But in a lot of ways, it was always an honor to be able to come on the Pit Reporters. It was a show that really allowed us to say a lot of things that we may not have a chance to write about. And for that, I'm going to be eternally grateful. And I wish everybody that has been part of the Pit Reporters the best of luck and hopefully brighter things ahead.
Bruce, thank you very much. It's always been a pleasure having you on. We've always enjoyed having you. And Toby, always a pleasure having you on as well. For those who may have missed it, this show will be ending at the end of this year after 26 years. So a great run, as you guys know, in the broadcast business, so we'll miss doing it. But we will be back next week, and we will talk to you then on the Pit Reporters.
Join us again next week for the Pit Reporters on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.